Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Tuesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. Jim Garrity on vacation, Daniel Foster of National Review Online in his place. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. And, Dan, it's been a long time that we've been following this Fast and Furious debacle. We have seen the march towards a contempt citation, and magically Eric Holder suddenly has more things he wants to share with Daryl Issa and Chuck Grassley, maybe even some more documents. That seems to be the case. Seems more like a stalling expedition, perhaps, than actual change of heart, but we'll see what comes out of the meeting today. Where there is not a change of heart, however, is how the Border Patrol seems to feel about Mr. Holder. In fact, as reported in this case by the Washington Times, the National Border Patrol Council, which represents all 17,000 of the agency's non-supervisory agents, called for the resignation Monday of Attorney General Eric Holder for his role in the botched Fast and Furious gun-running operation that resulted in the death of a U.S. Border Patrol agent. Council President George McCubbin III, a 25-year Border Patrol veteran himself, described Mr. Holder's actions in the case as a slap in the face to all Border Patrol agents who serve this country, adding that the Attorney General has shown an utter failure of leadership at the highest levels of government. Pretty sure there's some Democrats in the Border Patrol, Dan, so this can't anymore be classified as just some partisan witch hunt. We know that some Democrats are planning to vote for the contempt citation if, in fact, it comes up. But this is a pretty strong indictment from the Border Patrol folks.
Yeah, I mean, I think if the indictment were coming from actually within the Justice Department, obviously it would be the real death knell. But this is pretty bad in its own right. This is a, you know, it's a DHS outfit, but you'd like to think that there was, at least at the highest levels, that the default position is at least a little bit of loyalty towards the guys in power, towards the administration, that there'd be some solidarity between DHS and Justice. But it shows just, you know, that among the rank and file, this is an open wound, and with good reason. And they want justice. And I've said before, and I'll say again, that I think it's in a more, in a less eventful presidential term, if we weren't in such a bad recession, if they didn't pass the massive health care bill, in a boring kind of second Clinton administration term, this would be a much, much bigger deal. And sadly, that the reason that, you know, that that's the case is because of the choices that the mainstream media makes about what to cover and how hard to cover it. I think this is a really big deal, and I think obviously our side has been pushing it for a long time and might just be starting to gain a little traction.
Yeah, and it's also interesting the timing of this, just a few days after the president's rule change on immigration. This isn't directly related to that, of course, but the president has certainly tried to paint himself as the tough guy on the border. He's, you know, followed the advice of people who have wanted to secure the border better, and that he's done everything they've wanted. And this just once again proves that he's not their guy down on the border for a lot of reasons, most especially this horrific idea known as Fast and Furious, but I'm pretty sure there's some other reasons there as well. So as for the president, as long as we're close to the Mexican border, let's just hop across it and go to the G20 summit. And the president has been down there with his compadres from these other 19 countries, Dan, and the big issue seems to be the European economy, but the president also has had some sideline summits, most notably with Russian President Vladimir Putin, and the issue of Syria once again coming up. And this is a report on the CBS Morning Show from Nora O'Donnell, a couple different clips here, which show that the president, maybe the reset button hasn't worked so well. Take a listen to some of this.
The two men barely looked at each other. You could just feel sort of the tension between them. And the body language really represented how far apart the two leaders remain on the issue of Syria. Now, they said that they both support some political transition, but it's clear that President Obama did not get an agreement from Russian President Putin to push Bashar al-Assad out of power. And interestingly, apparently, President Obama got a bit of a lecture from Putin about some other failed transitions that are going on around the world.
Dan, do you get the impression that Vladimir Putin is in no way whatsoever intimidated by President Obama or what he might do? I think he sees him as pretty much being right where he wants him, whether it comes from the missile defense back down from a few years ago to the second go around on the START treaty and all this other stuff. It just seems like Obama's willing to give, and Putin has no intention of giving anything in the other direction. And he knows there's not much that's going to happen if he doesn't.
Yeah, I think Putin understands that Obama, first and foremost, is predictable. I think he understands the way Obama thinks and the things that he'll do. And that's that might have been something that we valued more during the Cold War when unpredictability could lead to a thermonuclear exchange. But when you're just talking about a power like Russia, which is itself very unpredictable, it might be nice to have a guy who was capable of surprising Putin. I don't see that anywhere, you know, across the Middle East or any of the other regions where we have mutual interests. And I think you're right. I don't think he's scared of the president either. A couple of years ago, it might have been just based on his private interactions with the president. But now he's seen, rather the public has seen, through things like the infamous, I'll have more flexibility after the election exchange, you know, and was picked up on a hot mic. The world has seen that the president is bending over backwards to accommodate Putin. So Putin has that very powerful thing in his back pocket. Not only does he know privately from his conversations with the president that there might be some kind of accommodation going on, but more importantly, he knows that everybody else knows it, which gives him an additional advantage.
Yeah, certainly true. And the president not showing strength on the foreign stage, it would seem. But we'll see exactly what happens on Syria, what happens on some of these other issues. But not exactly the person at the top of the heap at this summit, it seems like. And unfortunately, I think that's where Obama likes to be. As much as he likes to lord himself over Republicans and our country when it comes to international stuff, it seems like he's more than willing to lead from behind, as he likes to say. So, Dan, we've talked a lot in the past. Jim and I certainly have. I think you and I probably have a couple times about James O'Keefe going to different states on primary day and discovering just how easy it is to be handed the ballot of people who are dead, people who are famous, whatever. These security measures without voter photo ID is definitely lacking, to say the least. And now we've got even more evidence of that. Here's a few clips from a local Virginia affiliate in southwestern Virginia.
When Tim Morris got his mail last week, he got a pretty big surprise, a document asking his dog Mozart to register to vote. Not only is Mozart a dog, but he's been dead for 2 years. The form is addressed to Mo, the family's nickname for the dog. What amazed Morris is that if Mozart was human, he would have been eligible to vote this year. 10 on Your Side contacted the Voter Participation Center and found out that they're a private nonprofit group that's trying to register more voters. The organization purchases mailing lists from vendors, and while they do try and check every name, they admit some do fall through the cracks. The organization focuses on groups like young people and minorities, which could explain why the Morris's dog Mozart didn't receive a registration form until now.
Dan, a couple ideas here. First of all, obviously, there are problems, and photo ID at least is a must to make sure that people don't start claiming the name of animals, for heaven's sake, in addition to the dead and people who aren't eligible and illegals and all those other sorts of things. Secondly, I think this is a bad idea. This sounds like a Democratic group, and if they're starting to register dogs, they're not going to go for Obama. They know the history there.
No, absolutely right. Of course, they're facing a kind of Sophie's choice between the between a torture on a rack on top of a moving car and death and summary consumption. But, you know, I'll tell you, when I heard this news story, I had to hold myself from laughing out loud. The first time I watched the video, just that news anchor's voice, not only is Mozart a dog, but he's been dead for 2 years. It sounds like the punchline to a joke. Now, I think the voter ID debate seems to me like it should be quickly dispensed with. And, you know, and the answer is easy. We're not living in a time when, you know, it's onerous for half the population to get some form of identification. Most people drive. If they don't drive, virtually every county, municipality, and state in the country has a relatively easy and straightforward process for getting a non-driver's license ID. I know where I live in New Jersey, I can get official government IDs issued by something like a half dozen, you know, authorities at various state and local levels. So I think this is just, you know, this is an old debate that might have made sense to have in the 60s if you were a liberal and you were talking about how voter IDs are a de facto way of limiting the participation of poor people and minorities. Well, that might have been true 50 years ago. It's certainly not true now.
Yeah, certainly the case. And the good news is in Virginia that there are voter ID laws now. So Mozart or anybody pretending to be Mozart won't be going to the polls. That should potentially be good news for Mitt Romney and George Allen and others down the ballot. But we'll see. Dan, the craziness never stops. We'll talk to you again tomorrow.
Thanks a lot, Greg.
Daniel Foster is the news editor at National Review Online. And for Jim Garrity this week, I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Please join us again tomorrow for the next 3 Martini Lunch.